My dear devotees, I'm very glad to be able to deliver this seminar. It's actually only two lectures where I try to summarize a seminar for you. We will, in this seminar, attempt to enter a very, very important part of our tradition. A part which I found is very often overlooked. The power which blessing can play in our lives. In the Bhagavatam, there is a very revealing passage which describes to us what is possible through blessings. I will read part of this Bhagavatam section to you and then go with you into the purport which Srila Prabhupada gives to this section. And as you will follow me along in this scriptural journey, you will experience most properly what many devotees have experienced. That is how an ancient text, which seems to be at first very distant from you and your life, all of a sudden enters your heart and awareness almost with the force of a spear, and which will bring, when you are properly touched, a revolution in your mind and in your consciousness. Before I start, I would also request that mothers who have children who begin to feel restless and unsatisfied do something to satisfy the small ones, so that we have a meditative and attentive atmosphere. The section in the Bhagavatam describes Bali Maharaj, a warlord of the Asuras, who waged war against the Devatas headed by Indra. In that war, he was mortally hit by the weapons of the Devatas so much that his body disintegrated, and he was lying dead on the battlefield. Most properly, I imagine him to be a heap of ashes. Now, Shukracharya, his spiritual master, or his teacher, we could say, saw him in this condition and thought to himself, Bali is, after all, not such a bad man. Let us give him life. Again, he did so. He gave him life again, Bali Maharaj gathered his strength and his wits, and decided, I go again to war against the Devatas, and this time I will win. What did he do to make the impossible possible? He took brahmachari life. He went to his guru and washed his clothes, served him meals. Imagine the powerful muscles of his arms trying to wash a kopan. For a whole year, he did this menial servant service. And after the time was completed, he again entered the battlefield. And now the words of the Bhagavatam. Indra saw him coming, and he asked his spiritual master, Brihaspati. Imagine, Bali was coming with his army, Indra is there, the battlefield, first of all thinking, well, we just defeated him. He was dead. What does he want? But as he sees Bali Maharaj, he describes, my Lord, our old enemy Bali Maharaj now has new enthusiasm. And he has obtained such astonishing power that we think that perhaps we cannot resist his prowess. No one anywhere can counteract this arrangement of Bali's. It is now appearing that Bali is trying to drink up the entire universe with his mouth, lick up the 10 directions with his tongue, and raise fire in every direction where his eyes look. I won't look at anyone, because maybe a little fire comes from me. Hare Krishna. Indeed, he has arisen like the annihilating fire known as Sangvataka. Now Indra wants to know what happened. Kindly inform me, what is the cause for Bali Maharaja's strength, endeavor, influence and victory? How has he become so strong? Brihaspati knows what is the strength of Bali Maharaj's newfound enthusiasm, which is what is behind his strength, his endeavor, his influence, and his victory. My dear devotees, we are in America. Strength, influence, and victory are the magical words which everyone wants here. Are you also interested in this? Maybe you have sometimes phases in your life where you don't have strengths, where your influence has gone, and where everything you touch seems to fail. So listen, this is about you. This gets to you now. Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods, said, O Indra, I know the cause for your enemies becoming so powerful. The Brahmana descendants of Bhrigu Muni were pleased by Bali Maharaj, their disciple, and endowed him with such extraordinary power. So it seemed Bali Maharaj had been plucked in to a source of power which was not his own. And now his body was healthy again, and when Indra saw him, already the war was fought. Bali was victorious. Indra can see it. He is a little sensitive. So Prabhupada now takes this ancient Puranic story, where maybe some of you will say, oh, this was long ago, right into our lives and our hearts. And this will be the last stretch of reading. Please be attentive. He says, ordinarily Bali and his forces could not achieve such strength, but it appears that the Brahmana descendants of Bhrigu Muni, that's his parampara, being pleased with Bali Maharaj, endowed him with this spiritual power. In other words, Brihaspati informed Indra that Bali Maharaj's prowess was not his own, but that of his exalted guru Shukracharya. We sing in our daily prayers, please sing, Prabhupada gives us, yasya prasadat bhagavat prasado, Yasya pasara nagati gotopi tayam stuvam stasya yashasti sandhyam pandiguro shitara naravindo. By the pleasure of the spiritual master, one can get extraordinary power, especially in spiritual advancement. And please listen now to the last sentence from this section. It is really the sentence which awoke me and inspired me to give this presentation. It says, the blessings of the spiritual master are more powerful than one's personal endeavor for such advancement. Especially for spiritual advancement, one should carry out the bona fide order of the spiritual master. And then he says, by the parampara system, one can thus be endowed with the original spiritual power coming from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In our seminar or presentation, we will deal with some powerful spiritual techniques which will allow us to come in contact with the original power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And please again take note, so long you might have done what 95% of the Hare Krishna movement does. To believe in our own endeavors, that I must do this, I must chant better, I must come more earlier to morning programs, I must this and that, do this and that, and you found out, oh, I'm still at the level where I started my journey, a little lower in my enthusiasm, a little higher. And therefore you might have felt in your heart, what is the use of these practices? There is something which you might have overlooked or seen but not recognized as so important. And this is the power of blessings. From different sources, we have heard now the source of this from the spiritual master, but we will learn different additional sources also. When Srila Prabhupada was asked about his success, which was amazing to those who met him, that is to make a movement of ascetics, that was our Hare Krishna movement in Prabhupada's times, and spread it all over the world. Prabhupada said, I have not done anything. It is all the mercy of my spiritual master. At other times he would say, it's all due to the blessings of my spiritual master. He would never think that he did it. He believed that the power of blessings did it. The whole Vedic culture is a culture of receiving blessings from different agents, and I will go with you through 8 classical Vedical or Vedic sources of power where the blessing comes. But first of all, I need to introduce to you my thermos flask here. It is here. This thermos flask went up to Mount Kailash in Tibet with me. It is my most constant associate. Even the servants who travel with me are not as old as my thermos flask. Let us hear the story of this thermos flask. The thermos flask teaches us a very important principle of receiving blessings. Blessings always flow when your container, that is your heart, in which you want to achieve the blessings, are lower than the agent from which the blessings flow. Just like here. It always has to go this way. The cup has to be down, and then it flows from up to down. Believe me, in cars and so on, I have tried it in different ways and it doesn't work. It just doesn't come like a fountain from here, from the ground, into my glass. It always goes in a different way. Water or tea flows from up to down. So the person who wishes to receive blessings needs to learn a culture of respect, a culture which, as you will see from the letter of the third American president to King George, goes entirely opposite to your American culture. You will see. Your means, not your devotee culture, the American culture, I should say, because you also, that was the wrong way to say, I'm sorry, I want to make a point and I'm getting a little fiery now. You will see towards the end of the lecture. So, the Vedic culture teaches us really a culture of respect, a culture where blessings can be received. In the Varnashram system, there are 8 reasons why a person should offer respect, or 8 sources to where respect should be offered. First, Naramatir Mayada. Someone should be respected because he has attained the human form of life. It's a reason to respect him. The second is Satgata Matir Mayada. A person should be respected because he has culture. The third reason to respect is because he has attained a position. I do remember how Prabhupada went with his disciples to the Bhubaneswara Zoo, and one of his disciples went to the lion cage and went like this, trying to tease the lion into action. Prabhupada forbade him. He said, "Don't do this. After all, he is the lion." Respectable in some ways, in some degree. Hare Krishna. I remembered this when I was in South Africa, because we were driving through an area where there were wild lions, and I wanted to see the lions in action, and I rolled down the windows, which you shouldn't do because then they smell you, and made like this. And the lion was the lion. He came and he looked at us and we said, "It's all right. No confrontation is sought." So yes, the lion is to be respected. Vibhuti, the Lord has invested something of his strength, and that is respectable. Then someone is to be respected because he has knowledge. Then Satguna Maryada. He has good qualities as a sannyasi maybe, or a brahmana. We look up to him. Then due to the vana and the ashram, but ultimately the respect is given due to bhakti. The Vedic culture teaches us this type of respect because, yes, from everyone you can obtain blessings. You need to respect everyone according to his relative position. But even your non-devotee parents can give you blessings. There is an interesting branch in modern psychology where it is seen that when parents don't bless the endeavor of their child, the child will have some setback in his life. When I got to know this, I invited my parents to my birthday. It was a large assembly, and I said to them, I really forget to ask you for blessings. I remember you were both very angry when I took sannyas, because you understood no grandchild for me is coming. And I really want you to see this, my life, in all what it means, in all its busyness, in all its challenges. Come to my birthday and then please bless me. And the parents did so. And I felt relieved. A cloud had gone. It's something psychological, human. It's not spiritual. But I will not deal now with these lower forms. I don't want to say lower. These other forms of respect. I want to come to respecting spiritual people to collect powerful spiritual blessings, not material blessings. They may be necessary here and there, but I only have two presentations and want to go in this direction with you. Now, as I mentioned, but yes, because we are in the temple and it needs to be said, I want to say you need to respect not only spiritual people, although I will talk mostly about this. The Vedic culture, which is a culture which offers help for our spiritual journey, also always includes two levels. The Lokika, that means the human level, where you should act properly, and also the Alokika, that is the spiritual level. The devotees should not think that they are highly placed lovers of God, swimming in the ocean of transcendence, and they do not require the Lokika level. I think you all have seen, maybe even in this place, that things like stealing, things like lying, things like not keeping commitments do throw a spear in your back. You never expected it. You don't even know exactly from where it came, but you suffer and sometimes fall down. You cannot ignore this human level. That is important, because you, as strange as it may sound, you need also blessings from Dharma. It shouldn't sound strange, but I'm just saying it. Someone who doesn't practice Dharma will not be protected and blessed by Dharma. Keep words, keep commitments, and so on and so forth. Because if you don't, there will be a reaction and you might stumble. Okay. The main thing which helps us, or no, which doesn't help us, which keeps us from not taking blessings, is a certain amount of pride. Or I could say masks. There are three types of blindnesses which happen when you get proud. or three sources of blindnesses. You may be proud due to your birth. This is called Janmanda, blind by birth. You may be proud by your activities and your achievements. That's called Kamanda, a blindness which comes due to activities. And you may be just proud in other ways. And it is this pride, which constructs masks about or around your spiritual persona, your life as a devotee, and it is due to these masks that you are actually not able to see the necessity to take blessings. I would like to tell you today a story about pride which might make you cry. I will talk this story in very subtle language. I remember the last time I did it, half of my audience was under the table crying. But here I will not do it so intense. It's a festival of inspiration after all. But please study why you can't seek blessings and why you may not get blessings. It's because you have not learned that blessings flow from up to down, and you have not learned to put yourself in the proper position where to receive blessings. It may be because you have taken to the masks of pride. Now I will quickly meditate about Sankirtan Prabhu, who has trained me in storytelling, and I will hopefully please him. He will give me his critical feedback. Once. There was a beautiful princess. Her 18th birthday came, and a celebration in honor of her was arranged. Oh, she was so happy. She was able to present her poetry to the best of the poets on that day. And in the later part of the night, a romantic gathering, everything within the four rules, happened with the prince of the neighboring country. There was talk that maybe the two powerful kingdoms would come together and form an alliance. Happy, she went to bed. It was 2 o'clock in the morning. She lay down, and all of a sudden, she heard a voice, a most disturbing voice. Let me free! Finally, let me free! Who was calling? She looked underneath the bed. She was a Kshatriya lady. Who was calling? And again the voice, let me free, finally. Who are you that is calling, please? The answer came back, I am yourself. I am myself. There is no other self. No, said the voice, what you think is yourself is only one of your many masks. The princess was severely challenged. She somehow dressed niggardly and ran into the forest, trying to escape from the voice. But all this way, the voice kept coming to her and said, I will not give peace unless and until you let me free. In exhaustion, she fell. And fell asleep. In that night she had a dream, and I will not psychoanalyze the dream for you. You will have to do it yourself. She saw a building which looked something like a tower with two windows and one door. Looked like a face. And then inside the building, staircases which did look like the spinal cord. And at the bottom of the staircase, a little bit in this position, she saw a person full of light and gold. And as their eyes met, for a moment, she understood that was her imprisoned self. And the person said, "Let me free." With these words she awoke, and there was a sadhu. The sadhu said, "Have you heard the call?" "Yes, but how do you know and what this is all about?" "Come with me. Look into the mirror. And not a mirror, into the lake. We will have some work to do." The princess looked into the lake and expected her beautiful face. But oh no, there was a vain face. Do you know what is vain? Is this the correct English word? Staring at her. The sadhu said, "Do you want to be that?" She said, "No." The sadhu says, "It's only one of your many masks." And he took his hand into the lake and came out with this mast. And then he made like this. And the mask went down and vanquished. On that day, they took out 32.5 masks. Only a half, because the princess was crying so much that he said, "Okay, tomorrow we start again with this." I want to now bring you to the lake. Someone has to put the lights out. Is it ready, Gaurahari? Oh, Krishna. I want to bring you to the lake. The lake where you will lose your masks. We have to put the lights out. Yes, all the lights, please. Okay, the technique is not always going so fast as you wanted as a lecturer. Look at this pictures which you will see now in a meditative way, fully alert at the same time. And try to make a relationship to some of your masks. Maybe the mask of efficiency. Maybe the mask of arrogance. Maybe a harmless mask of impressing others to be recognized. Please do not be afraid. You will see something which is very artful. It is made by one devotee. It's don't worry, it will not get too much in your subconsciousness. It will really be necessary to understand what we are talking about soon. 32 and a half masks on one day. They worked for one entire month, every day. Finally, the princess felt light. The sadhu said, "Tomorrow, princess, comes your most heavy challenge. Tomorrow, I will not ask you, do you want to be that? I will ask you the question, who are you? And depending on your answer, your further progress will go on. You will not be able to cheat on the answer, princess. It has to be a real answer. And if you fail, I do not know if you will have the strength to start all over again. If you can't answer this question, the masks might come back." The princess said, what is the old man talking about? I feel so light. I feel so... Not a problem. Then that evening, she had a dream. She saw in her dream how the same tower, or was it a building like a body, or what was it? And the luminous or bright person who was herself had almost arrived at the exit. You know where the gate was and where the two windows were. And the person looked to her and said, "My dear princess, tomorrow is your most important day. Please give the right answer. Let me free. Finally, let me free." She was ready for the day. She came to the lake of truth. The sadhu was already there and said, "Remember the question, who are you? Now start." He was clearly very nervous and even afraid. So she looked down into the lake and she expected her clear, nice, bright, relieved face. And that was also there in the beginning. But then her face turned into the most ugly of faces from her two eyes. A constant flow of new faces was coming. Faces not just from one life. Masks not just from one, how old was she? 25 years. No, she recognized masks from her previous life. She felt drawn into these masks. She felt to lose her balance when she heard the voice of the sadhu. "Princess, who are you?" At first, she didn't know what to answer. But then, it seemed almost like a sound which came through the corridors of time, which became louder and louder, and finally reached her lips. She said, she had to really struggle. I am a servant. As she heard this, she gained confidence. More and more and more, she said, "I am a servant," with more certitude. "I am a servant," she said like this. At this moment, that face from where all the faces had come exploded and the water came into her eyes, or it could have also been the tears of gratitude from her own eyes who came, and she was bewildered but happy. The sadhu came to her and said, congratulations, now you can go across the world and find some people who have heard the call, let me free, finally let me free. Hare Krishna, this is my story. It is a difficult story to tell for me, because the moment I see the masks, I know exactly what is the problem. We have built a wall between us and the Lord, the Ahankara. Ahang means I, and Kara means the maker. There's a constant false ego masked production going on in our heart. Even while we are in Krishna consciousness, the masks are made and put on our faces. And that's they are made from the stuff of false ego, something which is so counter, which is so opposite to the culture of respect, the culture of seeking blessings. We are so often running on the power of our own endeavor, and we do not know that it is necessary for us to obtain respect, blessings. I would like to now read to you how this culture of is embedded in the American Constitution, the culture of not looking for blessings. As you might know, at least this is what we learned in Germany, hopefully it's right, that there was a time when the Pilgrim Fathers left England, and they came to America and bought Manhattan for a few glass pearls from the Native Americans. After some time, they multiplied, and then they had, after some time, some constitution drawn. And one of the presidents, his name is Thomas Jefferson. Is that correct? Thomas Jefferson wrote a letter to King George, that was the English king from where they had run away. He wrote something which you will find interesting. I just have to get the letter for you. Thomas Jefferson. I heard the first time about Thomas Jefferson from the Jefferson airplane. Yes, here he is. He did something which you would show in gesture like this to England. We are now our own people. We have no longer any connection with the English crown. And he wrote his beliefs, which are interesting. We believe it is self-evident that all men are created as equals. Equals. I believe your intuition says, yes, yes, yes. But yes, on what level? We are equal as spiritual souls. We are all part and parcels of Krishna. But we all inhabit different learning stations in our lives. Someone has realized more due to a long evolution taking hundreds of births and hundreds of painful experiences. And others have not yet learned, but are on the road to learning these things. On that level, and we will study, we are studying this level, we are not all created as equals. We are created as equals. Oh, that's what he said. Yes, we believe it's self-evident that all men are created as equals. That's correct, actually. As souls we were, but we have different stations. And due to these different stations, we are able to give help according to our realizations to people who are next, who require help. We can receive blessings from people who are posted higher than us. And the way to do it is to please them. And at the moment when they are pleased, a certain door in their heart will open, if you so want. And a benevolent and very powerful energy is released from their hearts, comes to you and helps you. This is especially true in relationship to Krishna. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says something very nice, I find. He quotes a verse from Gopal Tapani Upanishad, where we get instructions how to meditate on Lord Krishna. He is described to be a yellow dhoti, and he is dressed with a garland which reaches up to his knees. His beautiful face is framed by his beautiful locks, and he is there with a mudra of silence and meditation. So the devotee meditates upon this image of his beloved Lord and brings it to his heart. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur now describes what Krishna thinks about the meditation of his new devotees from this world. Krishna thinks, oh, my devotee is not yet spiritually advanced. My devotee has not yet spiritual associations as he meditates. He just thinks of comparisons to this world, but my form is entirely different. But he thinks he is meditating upon me. And therefore, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes, at this moment, waves of mercy are generated in the heart of the Lord, and this energy, you could almost say vibration, waves are vibration, extend from the heart of the Lord to the, to the devotee, and enhance his life, push forward his life and endeavors, enhance his meditation and give him strength in his daily life. So this principle is really there. When someone asked you, Prabhu, can you give me blessings? I don't know if you have ever come to this situation in your life and felt very awkward. It happens to me many times. And I know after this lecture, something will happen. What happened in Radha days, there's all of a sudden a list of 50 people bless us, and we go like, yes, I'm very unfortunate soul, I have no power to bless. But if you you do have a power to bless, and I will tomorrow tell you a little bit how you can do this. But for now I only want to say, if a person blesses someone else, what happens is that he goes deep into his heart. He thinks about this person and he wishes that person so well. And by the wishings of a superior person whom we have pleased because of our culture of respect and culture of service, an energy will come from his heart to our heart. An energy which is so powerful that blind men can see the stars in the sky, Laymen can cross mountains and fools can talk eloquently. You recognize the shloka. There is such a shloka in our line. Vice versa, when we do not enter the culture of respect, when we keep our material masks on our face, what will happen at that time is we will never ever get this powerful blessings in our life. It will just not come our way. The opposite will come our way. Do you know one of the many reasons why Kana lost in the deciding battle with Arjuna is proud. Pride, yes. Kana had made the vow, I will not wash my feet until I have killed Arjuna. You know, this is all right for 1 week and for maybe 2 weeks, but after a few years, well, smell is also there in the feet. But he really was serious. He did this tapasya. So Yudhishthira knew about Karna's deadly determination, and he so much wanted to protect Arjuna that he made alliance with Shalva, the chariot driver of Karna. He said, when it comes to the time where Karna will go for battle with Arjuna, discourage him, discourage his pride, so that he will lose. Shalva said, all right, I try. So on the day, I forgot which day it was in the battle of Kurukshetra, Karna was riding in the chariot. He arranged all his weapons. He recollected all the mantras. And he went. And then Shalva said on the right, can I tell you a story before you fight? Okay, if it's a brief one. Karna, there was once a crow. He lived next to a merchant, and the merchant fed him with honey cakes and butter. And he became very strong and very powerful. So much so that one day this crow challenged the swans. The crow said, I challenge you for a contest in flying. The swan said, Hari Bol, it's all right, you have won, you have won. But the crow said, no, look how I can fly. The crow was flying in 100 novel ways, sometimes in circles, sometimes in spirals, and sometimes even a little bit backward. And the other crows were applauding to their brother and said, you are Pakiraj, the king of all birds, and applauded with their wings. And the crow said, okay, swan, now show what you can. The swan said, if you only know one style of flying, it's all right. And they laughed. Then the time for them came to fly to Manasarova, the best of lakes, and they began to spread their wings and crossed the ocean. The cow came afterward, flying afterwards. Wait. No, it was at the crow, swans. This will get a little bit too fast for you. Just go home. And they started to fly really, really fast. Finally, the crow lost its breath and came next to the waves and sometimes touched the waves. The swan turns around. This is a new way of flying? Is this everything all right? By that, the crow had fallen into the ocean and started to drown. So the best of the swan returned and came to the ocean, and he took out the wet crow, placed him on his back, and returned back to the land and brought him next to the merchant for some more honey cakes and sweets. You are like the crow, O Kana. You are living on the food of Duryodhana. Don't be so proud to enter and battle and confront Arjuna, the best of the devotees, who is protected by Lord Keshava. You will lose with your pride. Seek blessings, O Kana. Seek blessings. I feel like Ronald Reagan, you know, who always gets applauded, or got applauded. I'm joking. I want to make the point. Pride brings us to the fall. A culture of masks, the masks of the ego, is not good for our spiritual development. For spiritual life, you have to imbibe the understanding that you are a tiny little part of the Supreme Lord. And you have to learn where you are placed and seek the blessings of the superiors in all your affairs. Blessings is more important than personal endeavor in one's life. This is was the first part of the seminar. Now, please don't applaud. Tomorrow, I would like to delve with you into a very nice subject. Briefly, we will touch upon how to practice humility, and we will then go into something which you will find very amazing. That is the critic, our best friend. You will not believe what you will hear tomorrow. Tomorrow you will hear how it is that a person who criticizes us takes our karma, bad karma, away. Some quotes from Mahabharata. And then we will go in the third part into some persons, places where we can seek blessings and get blessings. I would be very, very happy if you could come for tomorrow's part also, because I feel today we have only laid the groundwork on which we can build tomorrow's class, so that it is practical and that you will actually leave the festival inspiration with one more tool. You will get many more tools throughout the festival of inspiration, but I so much wish that you take this tool home with you in your life. I want to now say a few, three things. This evening, there are two types of programs. One is an spiritual entertainment program in the tent, and another is something which is a Nam Yagya, chanting in an enhanced way the Hare Krishna mantra that will take place in the temple room. And I, although I do not want to undermine the program in the tent, I want to invite all of you to come. Hare Krishna. Then, if it is possible. Then I want to say something how to say it. I really shouldn't say it myself, but your humble servant has written a few books, and he has brought these books with him to America, hoping to sell them in huge quantities. So there is a book table there. in the back of this hall, and if you like to do a little charity and a little book buying, please buy sufficiently. And there's also Jayadev Prabhu. Jayadev Prabhu is here. Maybe not at the moment. Yes, Jayadev Prabhu has brought a wonderful publication which is very useful for Krishna Bhakti. It's Krishna Sangita, Sangati. Krishna Sangati, a book written by His Holiness Shivaram Maharaj. It is really a literary contribution to the world of Vaishnav literature, which is amazing and describes the waves of meeting and separating from the Lord. So please also look into the book. The book is also available on that table. Yes, so that is also. So thank you very, very much. I wish you a wonderful continuation of the festival. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.